So, welcome everybody. We're here today in Ludham and we're visiting what is known as the Waterside Benefice with the priest in charge, Reverend Gary Noyes. And we've got a lovely cup of tea, we've had a lovely warm welcome, and it's great to be here. So this is Revy Steady Go, where we travel around rural Norfolk visiting churches and seeing what's going on the rural church scene. I'm here with Reverend Gary Noyes. And Gary, it's lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you both. Yeah.
Thank you for having us. There's so many questions we have about being here in Ludham. I just want to say, though, just to register, this is about rural Norfolk. And I know we're not meant to pigeonhole rural Norfolk, but the last podcast, I couldn't help doing a tract account as I was heading towards it, and it was at least one or two. This time, I was in a tractor sandwich most of the way up here,
And a combine.
and a combine. I could see ahead. There was another one behind, and there was another one ahead. There were at least four tractors, and then one came past. So we definitely are in rural Norfolk,
Right.
being here.
So, yeah, you're right in the middle of it here.
So, Gary, I want to just throw in a first question about our context here. If I was an alien who had crash landed into the Waterside Benefice, what would I discover? How would you explain it to me?
Here in the Waterside Benefice,
Yeah, what of these surroundings? What to listeners who aren't
you're
seeing
coming
it?
into a place really that has been inhabited by human beings for many, many thousands of years, and the marks are on the landscape, not just in churches, but in mills and in broads, which are all dug by hand. They think they were natural, but in fact they're not. You will also be walking into a situation where a lot of people around Europe, particularly, are attracted to this part of Britain because they've heard of the Norfolk Broads. And so there'll be many people who live here and many people who visit here. And it's a beautiful place. If you're an alien, you'd probably think, well, this is all Britain like this, or maybe, maybe not.
Are there many second home owners around
There are
here?
many
Was it?
second, yeah, indeed, that's right. In fact, Norfolk, like a bit like Cornwall in some ways, is really known for its second home syndrome. A lot of local feeling about that, good and not so good. And it does mean really that a lot of young people, really in some of these villages that I serve anyway, are actually going out of the village, not just to live, but to work or go to school or college. And there's not much for them when they come back, and that is an issue, particularly when they reach working age and they just say, well, where am I going to live? And I think that politically, there's a fair bit going on in terms of what do we do about accommodation? Yarmouth is not that far away, so there are lots of big growing conurbations which people graduate towards. But they miss their villages. They miss their mums and dads and grannies and grandpas and uncles and aunts.
Your churches,
Yes.
which villages are you
Well,
based in?
I've only got three now. In my last diocese, I had a lot more, but three. And it's Catfield Church, All Saints, Sir Nicholas Potter Higham, which is quite a well-known
That's a famous bridge, isn't
famous
it?
bridge.
Where you have to
We
lower the mast to get
lower the
under.
mast. Now they get stuck and be laughed at. Or go through very smoothly. And then, of course, there's Ludham, which is the bigger village and possibly the bigger church as well, and where the vicarage is and where I tend to operate from here. But I spend a lot of time out in the parishes, and I'm known, for better or for worse, to be a bit kind of old-fashioned parsony about this. And I get out to the farms and the outlying areas and hamlets and things and just say, well, look, the vicar's here. He's come knocking on the door and
That's great.
just say hi.
Being present.
And they say, well, we haven't seen a vicar around here for years. And, oh, you've seen one now. So there's something about the presence of the church, if that's what I represent, that I pray that what I do is a kind of pioneer, if you like. Others will join me. And in fact, they are beginning to do that, which is great news.
Brilliant. And you're a vicar, so that means you only work on Sunday, is that right?
Oh yeah, just so.
What do you do for the rest of the week?
Oh, I stay in bed usually. No. In fact, I don't. I don't. at the moment I'm part-time, so I've got to fit in a lot of my work in a few days, although the whole thing is very porous, of course, it has to be. But no, there's lots in this room. I see a lot of people who are getting married or baptizing their children, or perhaps they've lost somebody. And you're then dealing with a lot of follow-up and a lot of pre-visits, a lot of pastoral care going on, not just in this room, my study, but also out there in people's homes and villages. So there's a relationship between what they see as a church building and what they see as the Church of Jesus, if you like. So there is quite a lot going on there in terms of introducing people to the fact this isn't just a baptism, it isn't just a funeral, it isn't just a wedding or a blessing. This is something that involves another person. And that I think is a great conversation to have.
Tell me more about the landscape in terms of where people are spiritually in this area, what you come across in those conversations.
I think, in a sense, Dave, that there's a real not problem, but there's a kind of an introspection where people think, well, I am retired, for example, and I've been to church all my life. That looks like a nice church. I'll kind of join it, but on my own terms. And you think, well, actually, that's great, and it gives us a core grouping of people. But you go beyond that to really what it really means for them and what it has meant that they didn't realize. And it sort of changes the atmosphere a little bit. And so if somebody wanders into church who may not quite seem as if they fit the bill, in the old days, of course, they would be given a pew right at the back. But these days, they're just saying, look, you know, come right in. We're a welcoming church, and there's no sense in which you're gate crashing a party. In actual fact, you're very welcome here. So there is that aspect to it. It's a rural, retired sort of environment, but it doesn't mean to say that the villages are not also full of children who get on buses in the morning and go to school and come back again. So there are vibrant working communities. There's not all about retirement, although they are important.
And tell us about your vocation. So as in your call to be a vicar, because you presumably weren't always a vicar.
No.
When did you come to vicaring?
Well, it is a long story for a short podcast, but very briefly.
We can edit it out.
Very briefly. I was wandering around, as one does in the 1960s and 70s, around Europe and trying to find myself and all that kind of thing. And then I eventually ended up coming back from Dorset with some friends. We stopped off at a chapel, an art studio, which was a chapel, in a place called Hurstbourne Turrent, on the way back. And there was I with my sort of long hair and whatever, staring at this picture. This little old lady came up to me and said, oh, you know, enjoying being here, sort of thing. And I realized that she was the owner of this quite prestigious, well-known art gallery, as it was, the Bladen Society of Arts and Crafts. He said, what do you do? And I said, well, I do a bit of writing. And which was
always a good answer of your travelling.
I do a little bit. I did a little bit in those days, and said, oh yeah, well, we're looking for a resident writer. And there's a little cottage in the woods you can live in. And my ears pricked up, and I thought, well, this is it. I've just stopped off here from Dorset on my way back to East Anglia. What do I do with this? So I probably said, yes, great. So went back and did that for a year, writing little books and helping hang pictures and working in the gallery and meeting some amazing people, Bridget Riley and all those, you name it. They came through that gallery. It's an extraordinary experience. Anyway, there were a couple living in the village who were farmers, and they could see that I was searching for something. And they said, look, Gary, come and talk to us. And they said, we think the way that you're all the questions you're asking and what you're trying to discover here, we think you should go to a place called Le Brie, which is a fairly well-known place, Francis Schaeffer. There's one in Switzerland, one in America, and one in England. And I went to the English one in Greatham. You might have heard of Le Brie.
My cousin, I think, works there.
Really? Well, there we are.
As
extraordinary.
A psychiatrist.
Yes.
And a Christian counsellor.
There we are. Fantastic. chap called Randall McCauley and Jerome Bars. And I was there a week and I thought, well, actually, this is just what I'm looking for. And I went down, they had their services in this big drawing room at an Andrea house. And they said, Gary, you've got a lovely shirt on and you look completely different. And I said, well, yeah, I've just become a Christian. And then eventually, I came into the Church of England. David Walker, who's now the Bishop of Manchester, offered me a job on a big council estate in Redditch. I said, Gary, we're looking for somebody who's got a bit of experience to come and run this Anglican church. I wasn't ordained, mark you, but I said, okay, well, I'll be very happy to do that. Now, the thing about that was that eventually, having had a fairly rural background anyway, and that was a fairly urban situation, although people are the same anyway, wherever you go, I got to the point, and I wrote a huge paper on the recollections of a lay pastor or something, and gave it to the bishop, John Inge, and my main problem was that people were saying, well, look, can you baptize my child? Can you marry me? Can you bury my father, sort of thing? I said, no, I can't do any of these because I'm not ordained.
Yeah.
So that was the catalyst for me having a conversation with the bishop. And eventually, to cut a long story short, I went to Cuddesdon for a few months and formation and got ordained, in fact, by Graham Usher in the end, ordained as priest, when he was Bishop of Dudley.
Oh, well.
So we kind of followed each other around a bit.
Right.
And then got appointed to 13 rural churches in two benefices across rural Worcestershire. And that was just amazing. And I felt, at last, here's a round peg in a round hole. And I just felt very much at home in all that.
So Gary, just some quick fire questions.
Yeah.
What's the best view or hidden gem in your parish?
It's a place called Howe Hill, which is a hill, but only about 20 feet above sea level. But it's still a hill in Norfolk.
Amazing. It's a wonder to behold. What's your go-to coffee spot around here?
In Ludham?
Yeah.
The Vicarage.
Great.
Or maybe the coffee shop every Friday morning in St. Catherine's Church.
Excellent. If your parish were turned into a board game, what's one rule or challenge it would definitely have?
Always go back to start.
And what's the start? The Vicarage?
Basically, yeah. Well, or one of the churches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
What's one of the strangest things you've come across in ministry?
Well, that's a big question. I think, well, just a funny thing to begin with, I did a wedding the other day, and even though it's my church, I forgot where the step was.
Oh, no.
And I was up at the bride and the groom were there, and I was here, and I was going to take a step forward to do something with them. I don't know what it was. And of course, I forgot about the step. And here was the vicar almost falling into the bride's
arms. Lunch was, oh, no.
Yeah, exactly.
As is our custom, we are going to do the Revy Study Challenge. So I have a stopwatch at the ready.
Yep.
And I'm going to ask you, Gary, to name the villages in your benefice. Go.
Ludham, Catfield, Potterheim, with little hamlets called Johnson Street, Ludham Bridge, and one or two other places. But they're the main three.
Brilliant. Very good.
So which village did you live in?
I grew up in a village called Sherlock Row.
Yes, yes. Barcher, yeah.
By the Skoda garage and the pub and the sweet shop.
Yeah,
so everything you need in a village.
Yeah.
And a chicken farm a bit further down the road.
So we may have moved we, many years ago without even knowing yet. Now, the great thing about all this is that we are trying to become what might be described as an outward-looking church, like I said before, rather than just looking in and hunkering down. And to that end, just encouraging people to be brave and courageous and to get out and move around the villages and the rivers and to be able to not be afraid that somehow God would depart from all of that or just suddenly not be there, because there's a sense in which you, when we did our little mini mission a few weeks ago.
Yeah, tell us about that. So you went on a wherry.
Yeah, the wherry Albion, which is a very famous wherry.
Bishop Ian was there.
We had lots of fights with dragons, and he brought out his dragon persona, and it was lovely to get to know him a little bit, and the huge gifts that he has, and just to be able to go around the villages and put on services and meet people, a lot of people on the fringe looking on who didn't come to the centre, and it was just a toe in the water, to coin a phrase, the waterside. Just to be able to say, well, look, this is where we are, and this is what our intention is, and this is how we now want to portray ourselves as a church that actually needs to be out there and not to be coy about our faith. And it's so easy when you're in an urban situation to say, well, everybody knows that church and that's what they do, kind of thing. But to have rural churches having the same kind of approach is probably slightly unusual, because it's so easy just to settle down and be who you are and be very respectable and all that sort of thing, which is great. But there are other things that Jesus would call somebody, not just because he wanted to be their friend, but because he has something for them to do while they're here on earth, you see. And that's the great thing about that relationship that we're trying to engender here.
What would you say to people who maybe listen to this and feel they're in a rural setting, they feel it's difficult, that maybe there's the pews are a bit thin, there's not many people there out on a Sunday, and they're fighting a battle of buildings, and what brings you hope?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about this a bit earlier, and the thing that brings me hope is that God sometimes works in a very slow burn way, a very long distance type way. And you're looking at 5, 10, maybe even sometimes 20 years down the line in a rural situation. But God is above time. He's not interested in that. He's much more interested in the individual. And there's a sense in which the taking the long view, he would gradually build up that relationship and release people to be who they really are. And when they realize who they can be, what faith could look like, and you hear the voice of Jesus above the crowd, and that continuous, consistent voice, and you're saying, well, actually, there's something there about the way that my identity in a rural situation is one of great hope. Because if you start thinking, well, where is God in all this? And I'm just being snowed under and bowed down by all sorts of things that seem to be overwhelming us, then it's almost departing from the fact that if you go right back to the early church, for example, in the book of Acts, you think, well, exactly the same situation as we are in 21st century Britain, many, many ways.
Yes, yeah.
You think, well, what do they do? And they got out there and they were brave enough to speak whatever God was asking them to say, and to be the sort of people that he was asking them to be. There are several things going on here. So that gradually there was a sense in which those people, and indeed people now in rural Norfolk, could begin to see, well, maybe that's for me. Maybe that's an authentic voice that I'm hearing here, that where I've tried, like I did when I was young, 1,000 voices, and only one. There's a song about that, I think, isn't there?
Ooh.
That rises above them all.
Need to find it. We'll find it.
That rises above them all. And you think, well, just allow that then to just soak in, allow it to burn into your soul. And once you realize that, and you maybe talk to me or somebody else who explains the faith, then you begin to realize also that it's the stereotype that you had of the Christian church in rural Norfolk or Britain or wherever is not quite what you thought it was going to be, because it's all about you and Jesus. And then you and the people of God, and then the people of God and the world in the context in which they find themselves living. Mm. In our case, it's in a very comfortable part of Norfolk, very beautiful part. But behind the scenes, there is much poverty, a lot going on, and a lot of needs.
It's layers to it all.
Layers to it all. So what I would say to you, David, is that this whole sense of hope is the hope of Jesus. It's not our hope.
Mm.
We're fallible. We can fail, and we can just be crushed. God is saying, well, even in your so-called brokenness, I can remake what you are. And once you have that kind of hope, and those green shoots start to appear, then many things can happen beyond even our wildest imagination. And we saw a little bit of that 2 weeks ago on the Wherry Albion with Bishop Ian and a lot of other wonderful, gifted people around us, being the church and being out there.
I was reading John 15 and, you know, I'm the vine and you are the branches. Yeah. Remain in me and you will bear much fruit.
Yeah.
And just hearing you talking about identity,
yes,
it struck me that yes, one of the great things about being, you know, fruit and branches and vines, that the fruit is authentic to the branch and the vine. It is,
yes,
it is the fruit that we are meant to produce. It becomes what it's meant to become.
Yes.
And I think, and I look around the world and I see perhaps in my experience that, you know, prior to becoming a vicar was probably like an apple tree trying to produce oranges, you know, trying to thinking, oh, I ought to be a bit more like that, or yeah, I ought to be a bit more like that. And a lot of
that's how I can be that particular fruit that you just referred to. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I feel God has possibly given me the chance to be a shepherd and a pastor above everything else. And although I'm called to be a teacher as well, a pastor, a nurturer is part of my nature. And And I think there's something about that growth of a plant, and taking a little seed or a big seed, watching it grow, hoping it will germinate, watering it, giving it light and giving it everything it needs, and the sunlight, have huge parallels to actually growing people in Christ. And sometimes people realize that they're in that process of germination. It might take 10 years. Then suddenly something comes up above the ground, and there it is. And then when you see that, and God gives the light, he gives the growth to God through a person, it's very much like being a gardener, you know. And my father was a gardener, and you are the branches. And that God giving the growth, but in that sense of being with Jesus, enhances the growth a million times. And so you produce a plant that actually was meant to be that very, not a weed at all, although a weed is a lovely plant anyway, wherever you might put it.
He looked at me when he said that.
Yeah, no. Well, you're wearing a green shirt.
Ah, okay. I'm not a weed. I mean,
no. And the most joyful thing, talk about hope, is to see those shoots produce leaves, and the leaves produce eventually a tiny little piece of fruit, and then that fruit has seed in it itself. And then you go on from that and have the most extraordinary things that happen to the most extraordinary people. Over the years, I've seen it many times.
Amazing. Gary, thank you so much. Thank you for bringing that soul into, thank you for allowing us to come into your living room.
It's a great pleasure to see you both. And it's been most interesting to talk to you about all of that.
Well, thank you. It's so rich and great. So if you're around the Waterside Benefice, if you're visiting Ludham, if you're in this area, we'll see you in the pews.